It is Tuesday, December 10th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. In a few minutes on this evening edition of Ozarks at Large, what happens when snow and ice force a college to reschedule final exams, including putting some finals after commencement? We'll talk to Dr. Ray Wallace with the University of Arkansas Fort Smith about how this ice storm did create problems with their academic calendar.
And coffee isn't just for breakfast anymore. It's also for a canvas. We'll talk to some people making art out of coffee.
And a conversation with Devin Powers. She's written about communication, social media, and the commentary economy. She spoke on the University of Arkansas campus recently and talked to Kyle during her visit.
All that in just a moment. This is the end of year fundraiser for KUAF. Every year brings change, and for KUAF, 2013 has had its share. Because of the phenomenal growth experienced in our region, KUAF is no longer considered a rural public station by the federal government. That means a reduction in the amount of funding we receive from the federal government, a reduction of more than $66,000. The theory that stations in bigger places like us with more people can make up the difference from all those new listeners who've moved in. That's where you come in. To keep bringing you all the shows you rely on, more support has to come from listeners who use this service. Listeners like you, if you haven't made a gift to KUAF in 2013, please consider doing so right now. You can do so. Now, our phone volunteers are gone for the night, but you can support us online.
At supportkuaf.com. And you mentioned folks who maybe haven't given a gift yet this year. Well, some folks, maybe they want to add a little bit more. It is the end of the year, and this is all tax deductible. So if you want to do that, that is also an option as well. We invite and welcome all donations from any and all of our listeners.
It is a brief fundraiser that we have. We're just doing it a couple, 4 days actually. And the reason we're doing it now is to help make up for that $66,000 that we are losing from the federal government because we're no longer a rural station. And this helps pay for programming. Our biggest supply of income to help pay for programming comes from you and listeners just like you.
Absolutely. And it's because of listeners like you we've been able to be on the air and continue to bring you programs, national programs like All Things Considered and Morning Edition, as well as our locally produced programs like Ozarks at Large and Of Note with Katie Hendrickson. If you enjoy the combination of local and national news and you want to help us continue to bring those programs to you, you can make your contribution now at our website, supportkuaf.com.
And from all of us at KUAF,
thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. Entergy Arkansas says a fire that was contained and extinguished yesterday at Arkansas Nuclear One in Russellville was the result of a transformer failure. Entergy spokesman Mike Bowling says no injuries were reported and there were no threats to public health or safety resulting from the transformer failure and fire.
It's in a non-nuclear area of the plant. It's not associated with the nuclear areas. It's in an outside switchyard, so to speak.
Bowling says it took about an hour to extinguish the blaze.
The issue was the transformer itself contains oil. The fire itself was contained very rapidly because the fire involved oil. After it was contained, the responders made the decision to allow the oil fire to burn off.
Bowling says the fire occurred in Unit 2, which is currently offline, but Unit 1 remains in operation. He says they're now trying to determine the cause of the transformer failure and replace the faulty device.
The city of Greenwood heads to the polls today for a special sales tax election. Mayor Del Gabbard says voters are being asked to approve a quarter-cent sales tax to fund public safety improvements.
The reason for it is that we're trying to get a new police department building. The space that they're in right now is about the size of a closet. It used to be a storage room here at City Hall. And so we're expanded to the point, and Greenwood has grown to the point that, we want to expand some. And so we're trying to pass the tax to get them to have another area.
Proceeds from the sales tax would go toward purchasing the city's old post office and remodeling and expanding the building for use as a police department. If approved, the quarter cent increase would push sales tax in Greenwood up to 9.25%, on par with sales taxes in Fort Smith and Fayetteville. Gabbard says he isn't overly concerned about the past few days' worth of winter weather hampering the vote.
Well, I'm 100% sure that the turnout is so low it's ridiculous. But I'm also pretty doggone sure that it's going to pass because it is such a low turnout. The only ones that's going to go are the ones that are pretty dedicated.
Polls are open until 7:30 this evening. To find your polling station, visit www.voterview.org.
With Doug McMillon taking over as Walmart president and CEO early next year, the retail giant has now named his replacement as president and CEO of Walmart International. David Cheesewright will be promoted to the position beginning February 1st. He currently serves as president and CEO of Walmart's Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Canada regions. He began his career with Walmart in 1999 at the retailer's operation in the United Kingdom, where he served in various leadership positions. He also later served as COO of Walmart Canada before being named CEO of Walmart Canada. He began his current position in 2011.
Arkansas-based Bank of the Ozarks has announced that it will merge with BankShares Incorporated of Houston, Texas. According to Talk Business Arkansas, the deal will see Bank of the Ozarks pay $23 million for outstanding shares of BankShares common stock, a deal that is expected to close during the first quarter of next year. OmniBank NA, a wholly owned subsidiary, operates 8 offices for BankShares throughout Texas. And earlier this year, the subsidiary had about $301 million in total assets, with $169 million in loans and $269 million in assets. Bank of the Ozarks, founded in Jasper in 1903, is headquartered in Little Rock and has operations in Arkansas, Texas, Georgia, the Carolinas, Alabama, and Florida. Mostly clear tonight with lows from 19 in northwest Arkansas to 22 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs from 36 in northwest Arkansas to 40 in the Arkansas River Valley. And mostly clear tomorrow night with lows from 11 in northwest Arkansas to 22 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week's combination of ice, sleet, snow, and frigid cold altered schedules for just about everybody. Holiday concerts, gallery openings, and neighborhood parties were canceled or postponed. The headaches associated with rescheduling can be more intense for some than others. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith, for example, had to delay final exams late last week, and the rescheduling can be difficult because there are only so many days and hours before fall commencement ceremonies. Dr. Ray Wallace is provost and senior vice chancellor at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith and is with me on the phone now. Welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Why, thank you, Kyle. Glad to be here.
So how complicated do things become when you start moving final exam scheduling?
Well, it becomes very complicated. We closed campus on Thursday after our first set of exams that morning. We had exams on Wednesday, and then Thursday we got exams, final exams, through to about 11 o'clock in the morning, and then had to shut the campus down. It was becoming too dangerous. And then Friday, we couldn't open campus at all because it was, as you know, too dangerous for folks to travel for any distance. And then Saturday, it still wasn't good enough. And so what we did was we sent out a note telling our students, and our faculty for that matter, that these finals would be rescheduled the next week. You're absolutely right about commencement. One of the factors in commencement, though, most universities have a commencement ceremony. And frankly, not everyone knows whether they're going to graduate or not, because not often final grades are not in.
Right.
And so we're going to have a commencement this Wednesday. Same thing is going to be true. People will walk across the stage. Most people will have done their finals by then, especially seniors will have done their finals by then. But if they haven't, that's okay. We're going to do exams Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday for the weekend, for the people who missed last weekend.
Wow. Is this something, when you're putting together an academic calendar, and I don't know how far advanced you do them, but I suspect it's well advanced, does this ever pop in your mind that, oh gosh, semester's end in December, and there's always the chance in the Ozarks and the River Valley that we'll have inclement weather?
Yes. We always recognize that we're going to have inclement weather, or we might have it, and we continue to schedule. We are scheduled, we have 5 years' schedules ahead of us.
Wow.
And that's the only way we can do it, to ensure that room utilization, moving, the crews that move rooms, that set up for graduation, have time. If we have got a basketball tournament in our arena, we've got to look at that. And so it's a long drawn out affair. I will tell you this time, we also have an intersession. So school starts for students who, right after commencement, who want to take a course over the winter break. And so we have quite a number. We'll probably have about 150, 200 students, I would say. Maybe not that many, but 100 students anyway, taking classes over the winter break. We ran into a situation today where we have scheduled those classrooms for those various classes, and now we see that we have finals scheduled in those same rooms. So we're now frantically changing rooms.
It sounds like it's one of those situations where if just one domino falls, it's sometimes hard to understand where all the pieces are going to end up.
I think that's a good metaphor for this. Let's just say I was so glad that in our area the roads were clear this morning, because I honestly was going to be pulling my hair out if we had to cancel another day.
What is it like when you see this forecast? Because we had an idea, you know, several days ahead, and you see it getting closer and closer, and it's not dissipating. When do you finally have to make the decision, okay, for safety's sake, let's postpone?
Well, this time we actually made it a little earlier than we generally do. We generally wait until the morning of in the morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning, and a group of us go out on the roads and see, is this going to work or not? And generally that's what happens. But when we saw this one coming, this was, excuse the pun here, but this was the perfect storm. We saw this one coming, and we said, we got to call it now. And so, for example, by Thursday night, we knew that we weren't going to wait till Friday morning to cancel for Friday. And on Friday, we knew, frankly, that Saturday was going to be a bust as well. So we called those early as well. Generally, we wait. You know, we're attracting students from all over the River Valley, from Oklahoma and beyond. And many of them are commuter students. And so it's not just a matter of looking at what the Fort Smith weather is going to be. We have a lot of students who come down from Northwest Arkansas, and we have faculty who live up there, and we've got that road. There are a lot of our personnel, whether they be faculty, staff, or students, commuting on that road as well. And then into Oklahoma, the same thing. And so we look at a myriad of different weather reports and then make the call.
Yeah, that's one of the things, the changing dynamics of what institutes a college community in the last 30 years has really changed. Very few schools are, quote, residential-only schools anymore.
Oh, yeah. The idea that you're only serving a dorm community is, that's long since gone.
Well, you've weathered this one.
Very good, very good.
And it looks as if everything will be smooth sailing from here on out.
It will. We've got a good commencement coming up Wednesday evening. Then we have some students who will be taking finals a little after that. And then we're going to take a little bit of a break for a lot of people and then come back and hit the books really hard in the spring.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on making it through the rough weather. And we'll talk to you in 2014. How's that?
Thank you. Stay warm.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Dr. Ray Wallace is the provost and senior vice chancellor at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. He talked to me about the changes in final exams at the school because of last week's winter storm. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. The Alma Performing Arts Center presents entertainer Soji Tabuchi with Celebrating Christmas with Branson Pizzazz, Thursday, December 19th at 7:30 p.m. This Branson production is known for its festive and talented musicians, singers, and dancers. Tickets and more information available at almapac.org. or 632-2129.
And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And this is our end-of-year fundraiser, on-air fundraiser, when we come to you, our listeners, encouraging you to make a contribution if you haven't yet in 2013, or if you have, maybe add a little bit more. One of the biggest motivations behind this fundraiser is we are losing $66,000 in federal funding because of our growth. We no longer qualify as a rural station, so we no longer are eligible for that grant money that we had been receiving. So to help us make up the difference, we hope that generous listeners and contributors like yourself will help us make that $26,000 up. So you can do so now by going to our website, supportkuaf.com, and making your financial pledge there.
You have your favorite causes, organizations, and charities. You support them with your time, your energy, and your money. Chances are you've heard us talk about that cause, organization, or charity on KUAF. Every day we devote airtime to reading public service announcements, and 6 days a week, right here on Ozarks at Large, we produce stories about people in our community working to make this a better place for everybody. Whether it's a change in name for the Kendrick Fincher Hydration for Life or a fundraiser for the Ozark Literacy Council, we think informing you about the important work done in this community is a vital part of our mission at KUAF. We hope you think KUAF is also an important part of the community. We know you are very important to us because you and listeners just like you are the single biggest source of financial support we have. Please pledge online right now at supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
And the reason we come to you, listeners, is because we have to pay for the programming that you hear. You know, we have to write a check to National Public Radio for
NPR,
for Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And we have to write checks to other organizations for the shows you hear on the weekend, like This American Life and Prairie Home Companion.
And Ozarks at Large costs money, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It does cost to staff the show so that we have enough reporters to cover all of the events happening in our area. If these are important things to you, please make your contribution online now at supportkuaf.com. And thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. Commentary is, of course, nothing new, but the rise of social media is providing more people the chance to create more commentary faster than ever before. If you don't believe me, just do a quick survey of Facebook or Twitter from the past couple of days to see if anybody has had an opinion about school closings, street clearings, or weather forecasting. Devin Powers, an assistant professor of communication at Drexel University, thinks this almost instant style of commentary is changing how we talk, how we live, and how we think. She was on the University of Arkansas campus last month to deliver a speech, and while here, she talked to me about her research into what she calls the commentary economy.
Well, I'm looking at the ways that commentary has become so ingrained into our media ecology. And by doing that, it has also been monetized. So I'm really interested in the ways people use, in the ways websites or services like Twitter or Facebook use our own sort of user-generated commentary as content. And
so monetized, if there is discussion or commentary that's on social media, that is monetized?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's monetized because it helps to keep people in the conversation, right? It helps people to return back. And we all know that clicks are very important and engagement is very important, right? But it's also the content that sort of populates a property. So there are, if you think about something like TripAdvisor or Yelp, that is completely driven by, you know, the interests of regular people to just go on and express their opinion.
Well, money changes everything. So is money changing commentary or...
I believe that it is in lots of different ways. I mean, New York State recently is investigating services like Yelp because of the ways in which those reviews can so easily be manipulated. You know, there are companies out there that pay people through like services like Mechanical Turks to actually go on and write positive reviews, or there's algorithmically generated reviews, all to give 5 stars to this restaurant or 1 star to a competitor. So absolutely, money is changing the game.
So that's for restaurants or for some sort of other commercial enterprise. Is it changing the commentary that might deal with social discourse?
I absolutely think that it is, too. I think that if you look at social discourse, so much of it is reactive, mm-hmm. right? And the reaction matters more, almost more than what's said sort of in the reaction. And by that, I mean, you know, if you think about the kinds of arguments that people can get into on Twitter and the kinds of mean, acrid things that can go back and forth. That's all about just getting your voice out there, and it's less about sort of saying something substantive.
So, and I don't know if this is an example that works, so bear with me if mm-hmm. it doesn't. But after the most recent Miss America pageant, mm-hmm. a woman who was born in Syracuse, New York, but has Indian heritage, immediately after that, some of the worst things I've seen on Facebook and Twitter start happening.
Absolutely.
And most of what I'm seeing is horrible things that are being retweeted by people who want me to see these horrible things, not because they agree, but they want me to know that these things are being said. Now, that's sort of a shift. Is that something that kind of lines up with what you're talking about?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And the thing about an instance like that is that when you retweet something, that's a retweet for that person. And it's a retweet whether you endorse what they've said or whether you don't. But I think that the thing about internet ecology is that it doesn't acknowledge necessarily always the motivation behind a reaction. It just acknowledges the reaction. And a click is a click, a like is a like, a retweet is a retweet. They're all equivalent no matter how we feel about it.
So let's say I tweet something that's offensive to a big number of people, pick whomever, and it gets retweeted by people who both agree and disagree. What does that mean then? Who's looking at those retweets? Say it gets retweeted 10,000 times.
Mm-hmm. I think lots of people are looking at them and seeing them, so that's publicity for you. And my guess is no matter what the content of what you said or no matter how many people you offended, your number of followers would probably go up.
So if I am a political commentator for a cable news network, or I write a syndicated column, or I have a website, that's what I want.
Absolutely. You want to upset people.
Right. We're not necessarily using critical thinking to look behind the curtain.
Absolutely.
So do we become more cynical about the commentary we see, or more skeptical, or less skeptical? Or
you're saying what's the takeaway
yeah.
here? What do we do?
Yeah.
The thing to me that I think is important is that we think really hard, and we have sort of a moment of dialogue, of social or cultural or critical dialogue about what is happening to critique and to commentary. And I think it's the same thing that's been happening to journalism and happening to writing in general, which is the devaluation of those reactions. We always, you know, the internet has given many people a great option and a great opportunity to share their voices and make their voices heard. But in doing that, we've created this cacophony where everyone is trying to get their voices heard all the time. And when that happens, the techniques that people use have to change. And we've seen the techniques skewing in the same direction that the Inquirer uses to get you to pick up that paper in the grocery store aisle. Sensationalism.
I don't want to make a jump to a conclusion that you don't want to jump to with me, but is it safe to say that general decision-making and discussion, not just on Twitter or Facebook, in the country, is harmed by this sort of polarization?
I absolutely think so. You know, I think that there's a lot of problems with political discourse in this country. They certainly didn't start on Facebook, and they don't end on Facebook. But I think that given how much attention these media have taken up in our lives in a very, very short period of time, I absolutely think that we need to think more about what they do and the corrosive effect that they potentially have on how we communicate with one another. Most of us have probably had the experience of seeing somebody say something on Facebook or getting even into an argument with someone on Facebook and then having kind of a bad feeling about that person afterwards. That person could be someone we felt very good about before this exchange, and that can happen without having any real-world interaction with that person, without ever talking to them face-to-face. You just go, oh, I don't like how that person thinks. So I think that that's something I think we need to press the pause button, if we will, a little bit on that. And I hope that by talking about it and acknowledging that we have these kind of effects, that it can have this kind of effects, that we, you know, start to press that pause button a little bit more.
It's so odd because so many things, and I go back to that Miss America example, so many things that were written at that time, I don't think people would say out loud. But it seems as though there is an element there, and Twitter's not anonymous, and Facebook is not anonymous. But this idea that you can say things that I had not heard spoken by people out loud, and there's part of me that says, okay, good. I kind of want to know that people think these things that were, you know, but there's no such thing as this post-racist or post-Zionist society.
Right. And I think that that's true in some senses. I think that it's good to be aware of sort of the, I hate to use the word evil, but, you know, the sort of difficult and problematic views of the people that are around us. But at the same time, I think we're all probably guilty of having a reaction. You know, whether it's driving down the road and having somebody cut you off and you just have a reaction. And then as soon as you think about it a little bit, that reaction goes away. And I just think that these technologies, they just seize that moment of reaction and they exploit it and they profit from it.
I want to ask you about something else that you have written about at length, and that's rock criticism. You wrote the book, Writing the Record, The Village Voice, and the Birth of Rock Criticism. Something you mentioned earlier kind of connects to rock criticism. You mentioned in Kanye West and thinking about why he's doing that and remembering that almost everything has a publicity element behind it. And you write about in that book rock critics having to deal with that too, figuring out when they're doing something just for the sake of the publicist and when they're actually trying to convey a message to potential readers and consumers of music. And that's a battle they've had for some time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the things that changed over the course of the genesis of rock criticism is that awareness of the of rock criticism as a publicity apparatus. It was not there initially when rock critics started writing about music. It sort of emerged as they figured out that the industry could utilize what they were doing.
Because rock criticism at its earliest stage wasn't taken as seriously as it would be later.
It certainly was not, but it was an exercise in taking both rock and its criticism seriously, and in general also taking the criticism of popular culture more seriously.
What spurred your interest to write that book, Writing the Record, The Village Voice, and the Birth of Rock Criticism?
I was a music critic. That was one of the first jobs that I had. Well, I shouldn't call it a job because I wasn't really getting paid, but when I first moved to New York City, after undergrad, I was working at a magazine called Teen People. And in the evenings, I was sort of going and going to shows and writing about it for a website called Pop Matters. And so when I decided to go to graduate school, I was still doing my sort of like daylight or moonlighting as a freelancer. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to write my dissertation on. And at some point, those two things converged. And I decided that this thing that I was doing recreationally and semi-professionally was something that also had intellectual merit.
So when you're writing a record review, if we can still call them record reviews, a recorded consumable music review, what do you want to get across to the person who is reading it?
That is a really good question.
Because here's what I want. I want to know, should I spend my money on it? But that's not always easy to tell me because you don't know what I like and what I don't.
Well, I think that most critics these days would probably say that they have a bias, that they can't listen for everyone. So they can only listen for the people who have a similar taste profile as themselves. So they have sort of two jobs after that point. One is to give an assessment for those people to whom they can speak about the merits of an album. But the second is to sort of discuss the album as a work of art or as a moment of culture or as a political statement. And I think you see sort of different ratios in terms of how critics deal with those two things, but I think most are dealing with those.
Going back to Facebook and Twitter, it's so instant.
Absolutely.
There's no time. Most people, I don't think, take time to really digest what they're saying or what they've read.
Absolutely. And there's so much to read that sometimes we don't even read it fully before we share it with someone else or before we have a reaction to it. And that's true whether we're talking about music or whether we're talking about some political act in another country or some election or anything, right? We're all probably guilty of having read an article halfway through and then tweeting it or sharing it.
I think there are people who don't who read the headline
and
tweet it and share it.
Yeah.
And sometimes to their embarrassment because the headline does not at all indicate what is in the text.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the way that headlines have gotten are getting written has also changed because of that fact, right? So if you say, oh my gosh, Kate Middleton wearing what? People are going to click on that, as opposed to Kate Middleton wears a Vera Wang dress.
Right.
That's very boring. We don't want to click on that.
Right. This has got to be altering the very basis of journalism.
It absolutely is. Absolutely. And it's interesting because, you know, we've seen, I love to tell my students that when I was writing and working at magazines, an accomplished magazine writer could earn $4, $4.50, $5 a word. So, you know, if somebody's writing, you know, if you can get a good couple thousand word story placed in a magazine every month, you have a very good living. We are lucky now, you know, there are places now where you have to write, you know, 10,000 words to get a salary of, you know, that's very, very meager. So, and you're, there are also places that pay by click. So, you know, you make a certain base salary, and then if your stories go viral, you know, then you make extra money on top of that, like a bonus. So you can imagine the kinds of things that people produce in order to pay, to play to that economy. And I think that also goes back to this idea of what's an, an economy that's built on outrage, that's built on commenting on things rather than producing substance.
Right. If you've written a nuanced article about the Affordable Care Act and you compare prices before and existing conditions, and maybe you show some of the positives and the negatives, but it's a very detailed article, that's probably less likely to get shared as often as someone who says this is the ruination of the world or this is what, you know, vindicates it.
Right. And that's also how it conforms to the pre-existing sort of polarization and opinions that people have. And if we go back to that, you know, that mythical, very nuanced article about the Affordable Care Act, my guess is it's pretty long. Mm-hmm. So who's going to even make it through that article? And it doesn't matter if people make it through or not, because the number of clicks is the determination of how successful it is.
Okay. Very unfair question. How do we change it?
How do we change it? That's a really unfair question. I need to think for like 10 minutes.
Can
about
it be? I mean, it seems like it's just this locomotive that's rolling along. And
I have what are possibly some idealistic views on this. Insofar as I think, and maybe it's not idealism, maybe that's not the right word, but I think that we are in a particular moment right now where there are so many social media websites. There's so many services. There's so many apps. We all have accounts scattered all over the place. And I just have to believe that this moment is anomalous and that we are headed towards something different because people can't keep up. I mean, the number of people, at least people who are around my age, who joined Facebook and now don't really check it, is pretty high. I mean, if just based anecdotally on the people that I know, lots of people don't check their Facebooks that regularly anymore. And I think they do that because they're fatigued. And I think that we still don't yet know how this is all going to shake out in terms of what are going to be the two or three things that we carry forward into the next moment. And we don't know what the next thing coming up is going to be either. So I think once that closes down a little bit and once we're not all constantly checking and reacting and liking and retweeting and doing all of this constantly, then maybe some of this pace will moderate. And that's not that doesn't change the sort of damage that gets done along the way, but I think that it does add a little bit of, you know, a little bit of hope to the situation.
Devin Powers is an assistant professor of communications at Drexel University. She's also a writer and a researcher. She spoke on the University of Arkansas campus last month and during her visit came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. She's also a music critic and has written the book Writing the Record, The Village Voice and the Birth of Rock Criticism. This is Ozarks at Large. Thank you. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, December 10th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm H. McGraheda.
With us on the phone, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. How are you, Becca?
I think I feel safer not being there.
Why? Because it's the first day of our winter fundraiser?
Because there's three of you together, and that's sometimes terrifying.
We can't cause trouble.
Yes.
As we talked about, gosh, that was last week already, at the live show at the Fayetteville Public Library, I will harp on this constantly through the rest of the winter. Today's an Eagle Watch tour. This is a great opportunity to go out on a boat on Beaver Lake. You may not see eagles, but you might see herons and kingfishers and deer and hawks, and it's just fun. It's hosted by Hobbs State Park, 3 o'clock on various days throughout the winter. Tickets are $5 for kids and $10 for adults, and you do need reservations at 789-5000. If it is blistering cold, you will end up looking like the little boy in Christmas Story.
If it is blistering cold, I mean, because some of the temperatures this week are supposed to be very cold, should you call ahead just to make sure it's still happening?
Well, you should call for reservations anyway, but
right.
Yes, because the first time I tried to go, it was so cold their boat wouldn't start.
Oh, wow.
So
they were
plan ahead. This afternoon, somebody you might know is performing at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Who's that?
Or rather, tomorrow afternoon.
Who is that?
Beth Stockdale.
Oh, yes, we know Beth.
Who is playing the harp at 4 p.m. as part of their traditional ringing in the holidays with strings.
Oh.
And if you're in the Bella Vista area and you can get to the library, tomorrow night is their sci-fi book club talking about The Stainless Steel Rat by Harry Harrison. That starts at 6 p.m. and the world needs more people to talk about sci-fi.
Okay. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
KUAF is here for your community. And in this season of giving, we hope you can help out as well. KUAF's Giving Tree will benefit the Outback program from Fayetteville Public Schools during the holidays. The Outback program is looking for non-perishable food items and gently used donations of children's clothing, shoes, and coats. Simply bring your donation to KUAF at 9 South School in Fayetteville and place it under our tree. Thanks and happy holidays.
And that conversation with Becca was recorded earlier. Of course, this is the evening encore edition. We should point out that the event at the library
with Beth Stockdale, harpist,
which was supposed to happen tomorrow, canceled, though Beth will still have her harp there Saturday morning at 11.
Right.
But no event tomorrow.
Right.
Okay. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelly.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We just heard Pete talking about the Giving Tree.
Right.
In the lobby.
People can bring items to our gigantic Christmas tree that's in the lobby. Place things under there that we are donating to the Fayetteville Public Schools Outback program. So I think they need coats and winter gear.
Perishable food as well. Yes. And we've had several. We had some new donations just today. Thanks also to the people who made the donations at the library for the Christmas show that we recorded at the Fayetteville Public Library last week.
Right. It will actually air on our Christmas Eve edition of Ozarks at Large. But we had some local musicians, Leah Spears with Jones and Leah, including Jones. He was
right.
There too. We had Adams Collins and his jazz quartet.
And Farmer in the Markets.
Right.
So listen for that on December 24th. Mm-hmm. Would like to remind you also in this season of giving that this is an end-of-year fundraiser at KUAF.
Right. A time when we're coming to you, our listeners, and asking you that if you have yet to give your gift to KUAF in 2013, that you do so now, or maybe add to the gift that you've already given to KUAF in 2013. We can only bring you programs like Ozarks at Large and performances at the public library with listener support, and you can do that right now at supportkuaf.com.
And that also helps with Performance Today and Morning Edition and This American Life and A Prairie Home Companion. All of the programs come with a price tag. This year we're receiving $66,000 less from the federal government because we're no longer categorized as a rural public station. That, we think, will be made up through you. And if you haven't given in 2013 or it's been a couple of years and you do listen to and use KUAF and you can't afford it, please consider giving a financial contribution, a tax-deductible financial contribution, during this end-of-year fundraiser. You can do so, again, online, very simple. You choose the amount and you choose the method. You can do that at supportkuaf.com. No phone volunteers here now. They will be back tomorrow. So if you'd rather call, you can do that. But if you'd like to make the contribution right now, do so again. The online address?
Supportkuaf.com.
From all of us at KUAF, Ozarks at Large, and your fellow listeners who've already contributed,
thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. It looks like this is going to be a busy week for the University of Arkansas Department of Art. A senior capstone exhibit is scheduled for 6 to 8 Thursday evening at Sugar, the University of Arkansas Student Art Gallery. The gallery is located in the basement level of 1 East Square Plaza on the Fayetteville Square. The exhibit features a series of solo exhibitions by senior capstone students working in a variety of media and applications in painting, photography, and printmaking. The exhibition includes painting and printmaking students under the direction of Stephanie Pierce and photography students under the direction of Michael Pevin.
And then Friday evening from 5 until 8, the Sugar Gallery will host a reception for a group exhibition by first and second year graduate students pursuing their Masters of Fine Arts degrees. This is an opportunity for the public to view the creative research conducted by MFA candidates pursuing a professional career in art. That encompasses diverse approaches to a wide range of media, including ceramics, drawing, painting, photography, printmaking, sculpture, and visual design. That's Friday evening.
Saturday, the U of A Department of Art and the ceramics area will host its inaugural Winter Holiday Sale and Open Studio event. This one-day event will take place from noon to 7 p.m. in the ceramic studio, which is located at 326 Eastern Avenue. This event will include an exhibition highlighting the semester's most exceptional work, from beginning-level student assignments to the independent works of advanced undergraduate and graduate students. There will also be a sale of handmade pottery by the students and faculty. Hot soup and beverages will be available with the purchase of bowls and cups. Proceeds of the sale will assist ceramic students in travel to the National Council on the Education for the Ceramic Arts in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in 2014. All events are free and open to the public, and more information is available at art.uark.edu.
Champion Trees of Arkansas from artist Linda Palmer is still on display at the John Brown University Visual Arts Department Gallery in Siloam Springs. The exhibit includes 18 large colored pencil drawings of champion trees, accompanied by detailed drawings of foliage, documentary photographs of depicted trees, and informative text panels that share the Hot Springs artist's perspective. Palmer developed the Champion Tree series over a period of 5 years, driving more than 5,000 miles to document her selections. An Arkansas Champion Tree status is awarded to the largest documented living specimen of each tree variety found in the state. The gallery at JBU opened from 8 until 4 Monday through Friday and 2 until 4 on Sunday. The exhibition will end December 17th. More information available at jbu.edu/art/gallery. The Fayetteville Underground's monthly First Thursday event has been rescheduled for this Thursday, so think of it as Second Thursday. This month only. The reception is scheduled for 5:30 to 9. It will feature work from all 25 member artists, as well as live acoustic music, hors d'oeuvres, and a donations bar. The gallery is located on the southwest corner of the Fayetteville Square.
Last Thursday's art reception at Arcega's at the Depot was also rescheduled for this week because of the winter storm. From 7 to 9 Thursday evening, an opening reception has been scheduled for Ephemeral Shrines at the Depot. The reception is free and open to the public. Food, beverages, and music will be provided by the Depot. The exhibit will be on display until December 29th. More information is available at facebook.com/Arcega's Depot.
Painter Paula Waters-Jones will be the featured artist this winter at the Press Room in downtown Bentonville. A reception hosted by the Norberta Philbrook Gallery is planned to honor the artist from 6 until 8 p.m. on December 17th. That reception is open to the public. Jones splits her time between Northwest Arkansas and Taos, New Mexico. Her paintings unfold in layers of paint and glaze that build upon themselves. More information at 876-8134.
Another coffee shop hosting an art exhibit of sorts this week is Onyx Coffee Lab. Oftentimes, local art exhibits are on display for about a month, but the art that will be created Friday night at the Gregg Avenue location of Onyx Coffee Lab will be extremely temporary. The Fayetteville location of this locally owned cafe and roastery will be the site of the Friday the 13th Brutal Latte Art Competition. The coffee shop hosted its first latte art throwdown in September, and its owners decided to organize another competition following the success of the first one. John Allen is co-owner of Onyx Coffee Lab.
If you're into coffee, it's always fun because it's people that are actually passionate about the coffee scene in all aspects, from importers. We had a lot of importers here last time to normal baristas, to roasters, to just cafe owners came to kind of see how do we get involved in some kind of scene. And it's all just kind of building this idea that instead of trying to compete with with all these independent cafes, if we're really trying to push coffee to a higher quality, then everyone kind of wins in that aspect. You know, if we convert a customer into having a trained palate enough that they're really interested in specialty coffee, they're not really going to go back to maybe a place that's not doing that, if that makes sense. And so it's increasing all the cafes that serve specialty in the long run.
John says the competition uses a tournament bracket. Baristas go head-to-head and judges pick a winner of each round. This continues until one winner remains. Brendan Glidden, brew bar manager at Onyx's Greg Avenue location, won the September competition.
I've been working on it for an embarrassingly long time. So just kind of self-taught and just practicing, seeing what works and what doesn't work and how I can change certain things and hopefully work out better. Not always. It's been a long journey.
Brendan, who's originally from the Fort Smith area, has been working at the coffee shop since June and enjoys entertaining customers through his art.
When I'm on the bar and I pour a drink that I'm really proud of how it turned out, like visually, and I see like whoever I give their drink to and they get really excited about it or take a picture, post it, and like share with their friends, it's really, it's exciting for me that I was able to do that and kind of create that kind of emotion from someone just with a drink, with espresso and milk.
Another self-taught artist who also enjoys creating art for patrons is John's wife and co-owner of Onyx Coffee Lab, Andrea Allen.
It's just really fun to be able to make something purposefully on top of a drink and then hand it to a customer, and it has, it kind of gives it more meaning, I guess, if they notice it. I really, making a heart is a really simple piece of art to do, but it's funny because I can make some really complicated sorts of images and I'll hand it to someone and they're like, oh, that's neat. But if I put a heart on top, they are like, oh my gosh, thank you, you know, like, oh, thanks for the love, you know, and it's just like, there is some love there. So it's fun.
Andrea says she got into latte art when she got into coffee, which was at the age of 18 when she began working at Arcega's at its Mission and Crossover location. Andrea says she has always taken some pride in making drinks, and she learned to create latte art through a lot of trial and error. She now trains the baristas at her coffee shops to create latte art. Something that has helped her teach others is this past summer, she attended a barista camp hosted by the Barista Guild of America. Andrea is a member of the organization, which, according to its website, has the mission to provide baristas a community dedicated to innovating, sharing, and demonstrating best practices in coffee preparation. During the camp, Andrea attended a latte art class, which she says put a lot of practical knowledge to what she was already doing.
So since I did that, I've been able to really more thoroughly explain, like, how to do certain maneuvers versus just being like, okay, well, you just kind of like pour, shake, and like stand on one foot and like close one eye and cross your fingers, and sometimes you get a heart. So, yeah.
A heart is one of a handful of basic forms that are often used in latte art. Other images include a rippled heart, a tulip, and a rosetta, which is a form that resembles a leaf. Andrea has competed in a few latte art throwdowns herself. She says these competitions can make competitors a little nervous because most of the time they're not in their own shop, they end up using a different brand of milk, and they have to work with a machine they've never touched before. However, she says it's fun to attend these events because it offers the opportunity to see what other techniques people are using. This is helpful because Andrea says there's not a lot of formal education on the subject. When creating latte art, Andrea has found the most important thing is having the right texture of milk.
What's so tricky about latte art is that you're pouring a liquid into a liquid, so it's really hard to control both of those liquids at any given time. So if your milk is textured correctly, and I think I kind of define correctly textured milk as just milk that has a little tiny bit of microfoam on the top, so it's just really like thick looking milk, not super bubbly. You know, just having the right kind of milk, and then also just having the right kind of control over how you're pouring it in. So for me, you know, what works is just taking it slow until I'm ready to go, and then moving fast and aggressive to get some of that, the white colored foam, which I guess it's all white, but to get some of that foam out on top of the coffee, which is brown. So
Onyx Coffee Lab will present Friday the 13th Brutal Latte Art Competition at 7 o'clock Friday night at its Fayetteville shop, which is located at 2418 North Gregg Avenue. The competition is open to all baristas, but there is only room for 20 competitors. There is a $5 participation fee, and the winner of the throwdown will win the money that's put into the pot. Barista Magazine and Espresso Parts are sponsoring the throwdown, so the winner will receive a free one-year subscription to the magazine and a custom tamper. The public is invited to come watch, and guests may even get to drink some of the decorated coffee. This is because instead of throwing out the coffee after each round, the drinks are given to audience members. A coffee cream stout will be served, made with cold brew from Ozark Beer Company. More information is available at onyxcoffeelab.com.
What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose?
The answers to this holiday conundrum can be found in A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. It's back in an imaginative performance by Jonathan Winters.
Bah, humbug!
Reconsider the heart of the Christmas season. I'm Susan Stamberg. Join us for a special presentation of A Christmas Carol from NPR.
Tune in this Friday at 9:45 a.m. to KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. And support for Ozarks at Large also comes from the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of the region's history and culture.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Ozone.
I was going to say Ozark.
Ah, well, I bring up Ozone because I would like to go to Ozone and ask them if they feel that KUAF is a rural public station, because that is not an urban area, right?
It is not.
But I bring that up because KUAF is no longer considered a rural public radio station, and that means that we're receiving $66,000 less from the federal government this year, something we just found out in November.
Yes, and it's because of that that we are coming to you, our listeners, to ask for your help in helping us make up the difference.
That's right. And our programming budget, the biggest part of our programming budget, comes from you and listeners just like you. And now it's going to be even more so. We're confident that you want all of the national programs to stay on the air that we have. We certainly want to keep bringing them to you. And the way we do that is, if you haven't given recently or in 2013, perhaps it's time for you to make a contribution. We take all contributions, so you determine the amount, you determine the method, but you can contribute right now online at supportkuaf.com.
On tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large, we'll have a conversation with Tim Ernst. He is a Arkansas outdoor photographer. I actually spoke with him while he was in Fayetteville giving a presentation about his new book, Buffalo River Beauty. Gorgeous pictures and a really interesting conversation. I was very excited to meet him. So
I wonder if during this ice and snowstorm, if he was traipsing around.
Oh, you know he had to be.
Getting some pictures.
Oh, I
you
bet
think
he was.
So? Okay.
Yes.
I bet he was, too.
Thinking about next year's book and next year's calendar,
absolutely.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. That and much more tomorrow on an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Will be live inside the Richard B. Atkinson studio tomorrow.
Tomorrow at noon.
All three of us.
Mm-hmm.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for your support over the years of KUAF Public Radio, all the programs on KUAF. Again, you can contribute tonight or anytime tonight by simply going to supportkuaf.com. And from all of us,
thank you.